Welcome back to season 3 of Snubs and Dubs. We're talking about the snubs and dubs of the 74th Academy Award for Best Picture. I'm your host, Kyle Tobiasen, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jason Miller. Jason, welcome to episode 2.
Oh, thank you, Kyle. You know what? Welcome to episode 2 to you too.
Thanks, man. It's only been a couple days, but did you watch anything?
I tried watching Diary of a Wimpy Kid last night. My girlfriend wanted to put that on so we could watch, and I fell asleep very quickly. I was a tired boy. It was not even really that late.
Nice.
I had gone to bed.
Yeah.
And then she watched Diary of a Wimpy Kid while I slept on the couch.
While you were a literal wimpy kid.
Aww.
Falling asleep during a movie. Wow.
Yeah. So I saw about the first 10 minutes, and then after that, I was off to dreamland.
Nice.
How about you, Kyle? You watch anything?
Not really. I watched a little bit of Multiverses at Evo.
Ooh,
that was fun.
How was that? Were they as good as you are?
Yeah, no, they're way much better. They're so good. It was interesting because you could definitely see like who the best characters were just by how many people had like Velma on their team and how many people were playing like Bugs Bunny and stuff. And
is Velma OP?
Yeah, well, she's just got like this projectile spam. Like she could just like throw projectiles all over the screen and like, it's kind of overwhelming with her, but like, yeah. So
interesting.
Maybe some nerfs coming, but who knows?
People will figure out, the meta will shift change.
Yeah. I was happy to see my boy Superman though doing pretty well.
He's getting represented.
Yeah. Nice. He's got like, he didn't go so far to the final, which was a little disappointing, but there was a lot of people playing Superman and it was cool to see, which also was a little worrying because he's good and I don't want them to like nerf him to shit.
Yeah.
But he's got these like grab moves that are like so dope to pull off, but they're a little tricky to pull off. So I don't know if they'll be nerfed, but anyways.
Yeah, we'll see.
This is a movie podcast, not a video about game podcast.
Superman's been in movies. It's fine. That's allowed.
Yeah. All right. Well, season 3 of Snubs and Dubs is covering the films from the year 2001. And so for episode 2, we're talking about Memento. Have you seen it before?
I don't remember seeing it before. Movie joke. No, I've not seen it before. Have you?
No, I haven't. It's one of those Nolan movies that has just been kind of a blank spot for me. I haven't seen it, even though I know it's supposed to be good.
Yeah.
And it was always one that was on my list, but I never got to. So I was excited to get to it this episode.
Yeah, it's also like heavily referenced in a lot of other things, like the whole writing down notes on your body because you forget. For some reason, that comes up in like parody and satire a lot.
Yeah.
It's like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, the Pimento character.
Oh, I haven't watched Brooklyn Nine-Nine, so.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I haven't watched to the end, but I've watched a chunk. It's pretty good. They got this guy named Pimento. It's based on Memento, tying it back.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, should we just get into it then?
Let's hop right into it.
Well, if you were interested in Memento, I've included the links to the physical media related to it in the show notes. If you buy through that link, it'll help out our show. Or if you have any other Amazon shopping to do, follow the general link to help out our show in the process. A reminder that this is going to be a spoiler-filled conversation. So if you haven't seen Memento yet and you want to, go ahead and do so. I've also included time codes in the show notes so you can skip around to your heart's desire. But without further ado, let's get into it. Memento is directed by Christopher Nolan and written by Christopher Nolan based on Memento Mori by his brother Jonathan Nolan. I have an interesting fact here. Christopher Nolan's screenplay was based on his brother Jonathan Nolan's story. However, the screenplay is still considered an original screenplay because Jonathan's story wasn't published until after the film was complete.
That's interesting.
So that's something to consider when we get to the end of the year. This would be a best original screenplay nominee. So, yeah.
But, you know, maybe if we want to put it somewhere else, we can make a case. We can build an argument.
Yeah. It stars Guy Pearce as Leonard Shelby, Carrie-Anne Moss as Natalie, and fucking Joe Pantoliano as John Edward Teddy Gammel. I fucking jumped for joy when I saw Pantoliano.
He's become like a sleeper favorite on Snubs and Dubs. He's under the radar in the greater world, but we know and we recognize Pantaleone original.
Pantaleone. Are you ever going to say it right?
Probably not. The pantaloons in this were fantastic.
Yeah, I always knew this starred Guy Pearce, but I didn't know anyone else that was in this. So I was obviously surprised when I saw Joe Pantoliano. And then I was equally surprised when I saw Carrie-Anne Moss.
Yeah.
Awesome. It was kind of like a little Wachowski get together because at this point, Carrie-Anne Moss had been in Matrix and obviously Joe Pantoliano had been in Bound. So
yeah, Joe Pentagram.
Maybe Christopher Nolan was a bit of a early Wachowski fan and
maybe
what he saw. It has a runtime of 113 minutes and it premiered at the Venice International Film Festival on September 5th, 2000 before going wide in the US on March 16th, 2001. That's why in some places you'll see this listed as a 2000 movie, but for our sakes, it's a 2001 movie. But Jason, what did you think of Memento?
I don't know. It's so Christopher Nolan. Like, I think I like it. Yes. Overall, I think I enjoyed watching it. It's a real thinker.
Oh, yes.
And I didn't realize at first, and it's going to bother me because I didn't have enough time to watch it again.
Yeah.
Because this was a quick turnaround between episodes. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to watch it again to try and get a better understanding of what was happening. Because like at the start, it's a Nolan film. I'm okay with not having a clue what's going on for a while because that's how Nolan cuts his stuff.
Yeah.
But I realized a little bit in that, like, it is really important to remember what happened and keep a pretty close track of the things. Cause then you got to like work back from the end of the movie to the beginning to really piece together what happened.
Yeah.
So even though we watched it, I don't feel like I've watched it cause there's still more that I want to know and put together, but also that's a good sign for a movie. I'm going to be thinking about this one for a long time.
Totally. Yeah. You also want to consider watching it in like chronological order.
Yes.
Because I think like if the people didn't know, the main gimmick with this movie is that it takes place in reverse order. Mostly there's a sequence of scenes that are in black and white that are in chronological order. But for the most part, each scene takes place before the last scene.
Yeah.
So for the most part, you are kind of scrambled. And so it would be interesting to watch this in chronological order, but then you also wouldn't get the big reveals, which is so interesting that the big reveal is like at the start of the narrative. It's so fascinating.
I will say, if you want to watch this in chronological order, I will give a shout out to a channel on YouTube called Daniel Netzel, who has pieced together a quick 22-minute video of it in chronological order. And I watched it. And it's left me wanting because it does. I thought like if this was going to be an absolute masterpiece of a movie, that it should make a very good, compelling story going forward, too.
Yeah.
But it doesn't quite work.
Hmm.
And I think the reason why it doesn't work is when you get to the stuff that's at the beginning of the actual movie, but would be near the end of the chronology. It doesn't make character sense because you have Teddy wanting to help out Lenny. But at that point in the movie, if it was going the correct way, he has been trying to get Lenny to leave town because he just killed that guy. But now he's helping Lenny try and find this John G. And it doesn't quite make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a similar thing for Natalie, because she starts off, hers is the most confusing because in her chronology, Lenny kills her boyfriend, shows up in his clothes with his car with a note that she left him.
Yeah.
But she doesn't know who killed him.
Yeah.
Even though this guy shows up with all of this shit.
Yeah, you can kind of imply that it was him.
Yeah.
That it was Guy Pearce's character.
So then she tries to help him find Teddy, who she knows is somehow involved with the drug deal that her boyfriend had gone to and went missing from. But she wouldn't have known that he's missing because the timeline doesn't really work out because he goes to her right after the deal, pretty much.
Like,
there's that side piece. It doesn't quite work.
Okay,
like, I think you can kind of, you can force it to work when watching it, but if you wanted to like really reverse it and do the full thing, it doesn't quite work.
Yeah, and I mean, like, the gimmick works because it's putting you into the headspace of Lenny, in a sense. Like, you're able to obviously remember what happened after this and piece together the narrative as it comes together in reverse. But it is putting you in that, oh, wait, what happened before this? And so you're always like catching up while watching the movie. It's an interesting way to go.
But that makes a really cool, interesting movie experience.
Well,
do you want to get into the plot, I guess?
Sure, let's get into the plot. Is your plot forward action or is it backward action?
Well, okay. This is the Wikipedia plot. And I tried to go through it to see if I could trim this down. And I don't know what I can remove. It kind of talks about it as a whole, not necessarily in the movie order. It kind of like mentions the jumping around.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to read it.
Okay. Well, Jason's going to read right through the plot. If you don't need the refresher, you can skip to the discussion by following the time codes in the show notes. But here's Memento.
The film starts with a Polaroid photograph of a dead man. As the sequence plays backward, the photo reverts to its undeveloped state, entering the camera before the man is shot in the head. The film then continues, alternating between black and white and color sequences. The black and white sequences begin with Leonard Shelby, a former insurance investigator, in a motel room speaking to an unseen and unknown caller. Leonard has antegrade amnesia and is unable to store recent memories, the result of an attack by two men. Leonard explains that he killed the attacker who raped and strangled his wife, Catherine, but a second man clubbed him and escaped. The police did not accept that there was a second attacker, but Leonard believes the attacker's name is John G. or James G. Leonard investigates using notes, Polaroid photos, and tattoos to keep track of information he discovers. Leonard recalls Sammy Jenkins, another antegrade amnesiac from his insurance industry days. After tests confirmed Sammy's inability to learn tasks through repetition, Leonard believed that his condition was at best psychological and perhaps even faked, and turned down his insurance claim. Sammy's distraught wife repeatedly asked Sammy to administer her insulin shots for her diabetes, hoping he'd remember and would stop himself from giving her a fatal overdose. However, Sammy continued to administer the injections and his wife died. The color sequences are shown reversed chronologically. In the story's chronology, Leonard self-directively gets a tattoo of John G's license plate. Finding a note in his clothes, he meets Natalie, a bartender who resents Leonard because he wears the clothes and drives the car of her boyfriend, Jimmy Grant's. After understanding Leonard's condition, she uses it to get Leonard to drive a man named Dodd out of town and offers to run the license plate as a favor. Meanwhile, Leonard meets with a contact, Teddy, who helps with Dodd, but warns about Natalie. Leonard finds that he had previously annotated his Polaroid of Teddy, warning himself not to trust him. Natalie provides Leonard with a driver's license for a John Edward Gamble, Teddy's full name. Confirming Leonard's information on John G and his warnings, Leonard drives Teddy to an abandoned building, leading to the opening where he shoots him. In the final black and white sequence, prompted by the caller, Leonard meets with Teddy, an undercover officer who has found Leonard's John G, Jimmy, and directs Leonard to the abandoned building. When Jimmy arrives, Leonard strangles him fatally and takes a Polaroid photo of the body. As the photo develops, the black and white transitions to the final color sequence. Leonard swaps clothes with Jimmy, hearing him whisper, "Sammy." As Leonard has only told Sammy's story to those he has met, he suddenly doubts Jimmy's role in his wife's murder. Teddy arrives and asserts that Jimmy was John G, but when Leonard is undeterred, Teddy says that he helped him kill the real attacker a year ago, and he's been using Leonard ever since. Teddy points out that since the name John G is common, Leonard will cyclically forget and begin his search again, and that even Teddy himself has a John G name. Further, Teddy says that Sammy's story is Leonard's own story, a memory Leonard has repressed to escape feelings of guilt. After hearing Teddy confess all this, Leonard burns the photograph of dead Jimmy and of himself right after killing the real attacker a year ago, pointing to his chest, where he would get a tattoo to document his successful revenge. In a monologue, Leonard explains that he is willing to lie to himself in order to get justice against anyone who has wronged him. He therefore targets Teddy by ordering a tattoo, Teddy's license plate number, and writing a note to himself that Teddy is not to be trusted, so that he will mistake Teddy for John G and kill him. Leonard drives off in Jimmy's car, confident that, despite this lie, he'll retain enough awareness of the world to know his actions have consequences. That technically is the movie. Did any of that make sense?
Yeah, it's a wild movie.
Yeah.
It's fascinating because, like, the whole way through, you don't really trust anybody. But what you don't expect is that you also can't trust Lenny.
Yes.
Because, like, at the end of the movie, he basically manipulates himself to targeting Teddy, even though Teddy was probably telling him the truth for the most part and actually trying to help him.
Yeah.
That question is, like, really never answered either. Like, no. Is Teddy trustworthy? Can you believe what he's telling him? And I mean, that's what ultimately leads Lenny to write "Don't Believe His Lies" and then the license plates. But, like, still, why does Leonard want to just continue this path of revenge? It's so interesting.
I know. And it is, I think the biggest reveal is that he's willing and able to lie to himself through the tattoos. Because it's kind of set up that whatever he writes is safe and objectively true.
Yeah.
But then it turns out that he can manipulate himself to kill people.
Mm-hmm.
It's wild.
Yeah.
What did you think about when Teddy gave that long monologue saying, like, "Oh, you killed your wife. You did all of this and I've been manipulating you"? How much of that do you think is true?
It's hard to say. And I love that it doesn't really answer those questions. But I do like the idea that Lenny did have that same experience that Sammy had and that, like, it is just a repressed memory. But that's also could be Teddy manipulating Lenny because Lenny has that memory from before his accident of this similar condition and trying to use those facts against him, because Lenny's always confident that he's acting on instinct. That's why he can remember to write on Polaroids or take Polaroids, and that he has this condition because he's trained himself to do that, whereas Sammy couldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so he thinks he's better than Sammy. So he keeps telling people about Sammy. And so he's clearly telling Teddy about Sammy. And so Teddy would have the knowledge to know how to manipulate Lenny. But maybe Lenny caught on to that.
There's so many
asterisks and questions. Yeah, it's hard to say for sure. But I don't believe that Lenny was all Sammy. I don't know if that was all him.
Yeah.
I
also don't believe that he was totally Sammy.
Yeah.
Because he had mentioned in his recollection of Sammy's wife coming to talk to him, having a pretty emotional conversation. And if he were Sammy, he wouldn't have known that his wife went and did that.
Yeah.
So he wouldn't be able to recall that, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that was part of Teddy's manipulation, was trying to convince him that that story of Sammy was himself to make him feel guilt and want to go along with whatever.
Yeah, I agree. I think that because Teddy's also like, he's kind of like a crooked cop. He's trying to help Lenny in a sense, but also for his own gains because he wants the money that Jimmy had. And he's just willing to kind of get rid of these John G's with Lenny as long as like he can keep his name clean from any of the wrongdoing and also reap the rewards, because Lenny's not going to remember anything that happened.
Yeah.
Like Lenny's not going to remember the next time that there's like all that money in the back of the car. And so like as much as Teddy can say that he's going to split it with him 50-50.
Oh, he's not going to remember.
He's not going to do that.
Yeah. I do love how there seems to be multiple crime people named John or James G to kill. That seems too specific to come up more than once.
Yeah, but like it's also a good fact because that's a general name, John or James or Jimmy or any sort of like J name. And then he can also convince himself that it's a different name later on, too, because on the tattoo, it's John or James. And so what is he going to now add? Or, you know, Josh or something. And so like, and all he has is the last letter G. And so like he can fit whoever he wants to within that parameters, as long as it leads him to this path of revenge and he quote solves it and then erase all memory of it and move on and like do it again. Yeah. So how many times has he done this? Like, that's the other question.
Yeah, probably a lot.
Yeah.
Because when Teddy picks him up and says, like, you're not a killer, that's why you're so good at this, makes it seem like he's done a couple at least.
Yeah. And then there's Natalie, who's like another interesting but also manipulative character, where clearly Teddy was somehow involved, or maybe he was involved with, but Teddy's always been involved. I think Teddy's been using Lenny in this whole charade. And so they clearly wanted to get Jimmy, her boyfriend, as a John G.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was involved with that, like taking that down. And then Lenny didn't remember what the note was to Natalie. So he just went to Natalie. And then she identified him as possibly the person to have done this to her boyfriend, or that Teddy was involved, and then tried to use his condition to manipulate him into killing Teddy. It's like crazy.
Yeah, it's confusing because the way it works is that Teddy wanted to kill the boyfriend, the drug dealer, to get the money. That resulted in Lenny taking his clothes, going to Natalie. Natalie figuring out that he's involved with her boyfriend because he's wearing his clothes and driving his car.
Yeah.
So then she tests him out to see if this memory thing's accurate. It is.
Yeah.
And then the next day she doesn't actually get shooken down by Dodd, but she assumes that he's going to, so she needs to get him killed. So she uses Lenny's amnesia to trick him into convincing him to go kill Dodd, which he does.
Yeah.
And then
they don't kill him.
Oh,
they
true. They run him into town. Yeah.
Beat him up and let him go. Yeah.
Yeah. Which doesn't seem compelling. I think a drug lord would probably come back from that, but whatever. Yeah. So like she is poorly done by because her drug dealing boyfriend gets killed. And then she just kind of uses this guy to solve the scenario that he put her in.
Yeah.
Against his will in the first place. But I don't know. She comes across as like, she's a weird character because she should be sympathetic to the audience as trying to solve her own huge problems with her dead boyfriend and soon to be like chased by a drug dealer. But I don't know. That's a tough one. Like, I just feel like that character didn't quite get to where it needed to be because I'm just confused by who she is and her motivations.
Yeah. And then she's sleeping with Lenny. Or like sleeping next to him at least. Like, or maybe just using him for sex. Because I mean, like, to be fair, Guy Pearce is shirtless a lot in this movie.
A lot.
And, you know, he's got abs and shit.
Well, but he's looking pretty good.
He's good.
He's
but
not
like,
forgetting to work out.
But like, if you believe that her boyfriend was just killed and now she's sleeping with Lenny?
With a guy who's wearing his clothes and driving his car, clearly involved in whatever happened. It makes
identity
no sense.
Theft is not a joke,
it's not
Lenny.
A joke.
All right, well, we could spend all fucking day trying to dissect this movie, which is a testament to the narrative of the movie. But what did you think of some of the acting in this? I thought it was really well acted.
I thought it was very well acted, especially Guy Pearce. He does a very good job, very convincing in this role. And even though there's not that many characters in it, they make a really cool story. And all of them emotionally are able to pull off what they need to keep you confused as shit the entire time.
Totally. Yeah. And obviously, Joe Pantoliano. Oh, great as always.
Absolutely.
He's like, he's got this energy where he's like, you think you can trust him, but you actually don't know if you can trust him.
Mm-hmm.
And it just works perfectly. I don't know what it is. Cause like, he seems like he's giving this like positive buddy, buddy performance, but then there's something about him. You just, you don't know for sure. And it's like all in the performance. It's
great. And even though Joe Panda Express gets killed at the start, so you know he's bad, he still is able to make you question that all the way to his death, which is pretty impressive.
But you also don't know if he's bad once it gets later on.
That's true. God, this movie's so confused. This is also clearly like the first stab at Tenet.
Yeah.
Because the storytelling is quite similar time-wise. Mm. And I feel like he still needs 3 or 4 more cracks at that, because I didn't feel like Tenet was the best Tenet either.
Yeah, well, he likes time and memory and stuff. Like, Inception's about memory and dreams and that sort of thing, and manipulating those. Of course, Tenet is about moving forwards and backwards. So he likes this sort of space. Mm-hmm. And it is, I think this being like a trimmed down version of that is really successful in its in its attempt. So
I feel like it understands itself better than other Nolan movies, which still doesn't make me understand it any more than the other one. So
And I also don't think, like, when you rewatch this movie, that you will find the correct answer.
No,
because there are still enough unanswered questions that you can watch it and have a different perspective, a different experience, think a different thing, but also not know the answers and still be fascinated to go back for more.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can understand the chronology of it more and the steps in the process of Lenny ultimately killing Teddy, but you don't know always what people's motivations were in the end. And like the questions with Lenny, like, how many times has he done this before? Was his wife actually alive after the attack, but she couldn't put up with his illness anymore? And then now he has this belief that she died and is on the track of revenge. And there's so much. Yeah.
Do you want to see what the critics and audiences thought about it?
Sure. Critics, pretty high. 93%.
Wow.
Where do you think the audiences might land, though?
I feel like they're going to be lower. I don't know if it's going to be like poorly reviewed, but I think it'll be like 73, I want to throw out.
Interesting. You're actually dead wrong. Audiences were actually higher.
Oh, dang.
By 1 point, 94%.
Oh. Wow. Yeah, they were really into that.
Yeah. IMDb is an 8.4, which makes it IMDb's 54th highest rated movie
on
the platform. It has a Metacritic of 80 and on a budget of $9 million. Relatively conservative. It made $40 million.
Hey, that ain't bad. That's getting a lot of critical acclaim too there. Then that's some pretty high reviews coming in.
Totally. And I think that even in just it being part of Nolan's filmography now, a lot of people will be finding this as they go through. Like, because this obviously, it wasn't the biggest hit. It was number 80 at the year, which, you know, is for a sophomore feature. Like, he had his first, like, Following was his first actual movie, but this is like his first bigger budget movie.
Yeah,
like Following, I think he mostly did by himself and like self-funded that. And so, like, for that, like, for it to make $9 million and actually rank in the first top 100 of the year,
it's
pretty solid.
That's pretty good.
And obviously kicked off a great career for him, because I think his next movie after this was The Prestige and then Batman Begins.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, or I don't know, it might have just been Batman Begins.
We can IMDb that real quick. It was Batman Begins, then The Prestige, then some little movie no one's heard called The Dark Knight.
Wow.
Yeah. I like that second crack at Batman.
Yeah. But that's amazing that he went from this to then Batman. Like, being in charge of reviving Batman from being kind of like a corny character to what we all know and love as one of the best iterations of Batman now. So it's crazy.
It is crazy.
Good for him.
Yeah, good for Nolan. This guy might have a career.
All right. Well, Do you want to get to our scores, though? That's the most important part of this.
It is, and I hope you have your scores ready, because I've been thinking about this movie since I watched it. I don't know how I feel about anything.
All right, yeah. I had to give it a little bit of a think, too, and I have my scores ready.
All right, well, let's start with your enjoyment.
I give this a 4. I thought it was really enjoyable to watch, even though I was almost falling asleep, not related to the movie, but just related to how late it was and how exhausted I was. The fact that it kept me awake and asking all these questions was amazing. So yeah, my enjoyment was a 4.
Excellent. I'm going to go 3.5 on that one. That's just my heart speaking to me. Somebody, like, we're in the same realm of enjoyment. What's your craft?
I also gave this a 4. I think it's well shot. Costumes are what they need to be. I think the editing is where it gets a lot of its craft, because without how it's edited, it doesn't work narratively.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of that went down to craft, and so it's 4.
I'm also going to give it a 4. I think the way that they put and built the movie really conveys how they need you to feel. Because if you don't feel confused and like you're grappling with the same memory problems, it doesn't work as well as a movie. And a lot of that is on how it was built and put together.
Totally.
Your execution.
I actually gave this a 4.5 for execution. I thought the three leads, or I guess the one lead and the two supporting characters in this, were exceptional. The writing of it was perfect, I think, like for what this movie needed to be. Left you with enough unanswered questions, and it was good. Yep, 4.5.
I'm giving this a 3, and I think the acting was very good.
Yeah.
But I felt like the story wasn't quite there. Like, it was a really cool idea. I just felt like the story should, if for this to be a really, really good movie, for this to get a higher execution score, I would want this to work as a movie going both directions.
Because
I feel like that should be the whole idea behind this. But after both rethinking of trying to figure out the start and watching it in chronological order, there's just something that doesn't click right, but I feel like it could be there. So because it's not fully realized potential, because I believe in Christopher Nolan, I think he can do better. I'm giving that a 3.
Sure.
What's your rewatchability, Kyle?
It's a 4. I really want to return to this movie. I'm excited to return to it. Part of me wants to go back to it sooner than later, so I don't like void what happened from my brain, but I will definitely be back to this movie for sure. 4.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to give this a 3. I think that as soon as you watch it the first time, this makes you want to watch it a second right away. Yeah,
definitely.
But once that's complete, I don't imagine I'll come back to this one. I don't think there's anything there that makes me really come running back to it once I complete the experience with the second rewatch.
Cool.
Well, Kyle, that is going to bring you to a 16.5 out of 20 for an 83%. And that is going to bring me to a 13.5 out of 20 or a 68%.
Okay.
Ranking?
Let's rank it.
Kyle, top to bottom, Harry Potter. Where's number 2?
This, if you know, not already indicated from my score, is going to be my number 1.
Wow. It's
topping Harry Potter already.
Dang. I'll be the same. Harry Potter's going to be my number 2, and Mento is going to be my new number 1, but I don't know how long it'll hold on to that for. We'll see. Yeah. We'll see. But for now, top dog.
Yeah, I thought that this would be a little bit of a stronger start, but for your case, it's been in the 60s. Both times.
Yeah. Well, we got some stronger stuff coming.
We got
some pretty cooler movies on the way.
All right. Well, joining into the fun Letterboxd reviews.
Oh, lay them on me.
All right. This has a score of 4.1 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
Wow. Almost perfect.
Film nerds absolutely love this movie. The top liked review on Letterboxd is a 4.5 stars by Truman. This is what Finding Dory should have been. Could you imagine a Pixar movie taking on this structure and cut?
It's like when they find him, they also have to commit murder at the end. Like someone's getting gunned.
Oh, that would be so confusing for children.
It would be. God. The moral of the story here is you need to get vengeance.
Yeah. All right, this is a 4 stars by Robert. For sure, my dream job is playing the deceased partner in a Nolan film. Just filming artsy flashbacks in a suburban house doing mundane things and then die? Sign me up.
It's true. The wife doesn't have to do much. No,
but they're always in there.
Yeah.
It's like a classic Nolan thing. Just like the dead wife.
Yep. Amazing. Also, if you're in a Nolan movie, never be a second something. Never be a sidekick.
Yep.
Never be just like a spouse to an important person. You will be dead.
All right, this is another 4 stars by Wobble Up. Me, I watch movies for the plot. The plot. Guy Pearce being shirtless for 90 minutes straight.
I mean, the man did pull it off. He's got quite the bod.
When you have the script being having you be shirtless this often, I mean, you find a way to get ripped. I'm sure Guy Pearce was already shredded at this point. But. Yeah,
but you know, you're putting the extra effort in. You're getting a couple more shoulder days in.
Yeah.
You're not worried about the legs so much. They're not on screen as importantly.
All right, this half star by Nuggies reminded me of why you did the little bit of the outro last episode. Because if you didn't notice, last episode, Jason had to do the, that's right, next episode we're talking, because I could not get out of my head mementos.
Mementos.
So this is a half star by Nuggies. Mement no.
Oh, good work in there. Yeah, I'm proud of that review. Whoever did that, good work. I love you.
All right. Academy Awards. Do you think this had any?
Ah, man, I don't. I'm going to imagine that no, it did not.
You would be incorrect. Okay. This actually did have some Academy Award nominees.
Does it have editing?
It does have editing.
Oh, that was the one I was thinking about.
There's two, though.
More than that?
There's two.
Oh, dang. Best actor?
Unfortunately, no.
Oh,
best
no.
Original screenplay.
Oh, that would make sense. Oh, I should have picked up on that because you dropped a little foreshadowing at the start.
Yeah. It didn't win either of those. But editing, that's in contention, I think, for me at least.
Oh, yeah. This is a really unique project and it makes the editing stand out, which is some movies win because the editing is just a quiet part of the background, which is good. But this one, it's on the forefront, but it needs to be.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Some other awards. It won the Saturn Award for Best Action Adventure or Thriller Film. It was also the nominee for the Golden Globe for Best Screenplay, and there was a lot of attention to its screenplay actually across critics groups. And lastly, Christopher Nolan was nominated by the Directors Guild of America for Outstanding Directorial Achievement in Motion Picture Arts, but didn't win. He did instead win the MTV Movie Award for Best New Filmmaker. So
there you go. As long as he's getting something.
Yeah. Any of that surprise you? Anything seeming missing?
No, I get it. I think that checks out. Like, the only other thing that I think could be in contention for an Oscar would be Best Director.
Yeah.
But I'd need to see the list. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's the kind of thing that I'm going to take any grudges out on if he's not in there.
Yeah, I'm going to have Guy Pearce on my radar for Best Actor a little bit. Mm-hmm. We'll see what the rest of the Best Actor has to give. But I think he's up there for me in that list so far. All right. Interesting facts time. So we talked about a YouTube video having a chronological order, but I found a DVD fact, which is always fun for me.
Oh, nice.
So the limited edition DVD and the standard Region 2 edition allows the movie to be watched in the exact chronological order of the event in the film. The first couple of scenes of the regular cut of the movie appear normal in this version, meaning they are not reversed. However, the version of the film on disc 2 is quite difficult to reach. The users must answer several questions and solve a puzzle.
What?
And forward, reverse, and chapter skip capacities are all disabled. So they make it difficult for you to get to it.
Oh my God.
You can actually watch it. They put so much effort into DVDs back then.
Yeah,
so
now, much fun. Now they slap it on a disc, remove features probably, and give it to you and tell you to shut up.
Yeah, totally. That's exactly it. Ugh, it's frustrating, but I still love it. All right. During Teddy's line, "You don't have a clue, you freak," director Christopher Nolan felt that Joe Pantoliano did not quite nail the end of the line, so he decided to re-record the last two words to his liking, delivering them himself. Therefore, in the final film, the words "you freak" as we hear them are actually being recorded not by Pantoliano, but by Nolan impersonating Pantoliano's voice. Pantoliano was unaware of this dubbing until an interview for Anatomy of a Scene, which was released in March of 2001. So after it had already premiered at a bunch of festivals.
That's wild.
Yeah.
How bad could Pantoliano's line have been? That it would have been better for Christopher Nolan to record it himself pretending to be him rather than just do the original.
I don't know. But I guess he just, you know, had to have that power, had to have that control.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was just he wanted to get a little extra piece of himself in there, you know?
Well, maybe.
Or maybe he just wanted to show off his Pantoliano impression.
Yeah, probably.
After his wife's death, Sammy is shown sitting in a mental institution. briefly just after someone walks in front of him. And before the scene cuts back to Leonard on the phone, Sammy is actually replaced by Leonard sitting in the same chair. This supports the conclusion that the tragic end of Sammy's story is actually an event from Leonard's own past, just as Teddy later tries to convince him.
I feel like that was put in to continually ask the question but not answer it, because how could he have ever gotten better enough to leave the mental institute?
I agree. I feel like that's maybe a red herring trying to send you into the wrong direction. But I didn't actually notice this when I watched the movie, but it's just a quick thing and then supports that, maybe. Who knows?
Maybe. It depends how you read it.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't think it does. I think it's just restating the question, not answering anything.
I like that it's in there because, you know, it does add more fuel to the fire of the conversation, but it's interesting. Yeah. Two more. When Teddy tells Leonard to write, "Do not trust her," on Natalie's picture, which he later crosses out, he writes it in cursive. All of Leonard's other notes were in block print. It is a clever way of Leonard to appease Teddy, but also warns him that it is untrue. Even after forgetting that he wrote it himself, Leonard has trained himself to trust his own handwriting. So seeing something that doesn't resemble his usual handwriting makes him suspicious immediately. And so he removes it.
Interesting. I didn't quite pick up on that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's clever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no one should ever trust cursive, so I get it.
All right, last one. Teddy's phone number, 555-0134, is the same as Marla Singer's, Helena Bonham Carter's character in Fight Club.
Oh, he reuses fake numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of fun.
Any final thoughts?
I will probably never truly know how I feel about this movie, like every Christopher Nolan movie. Yeah. But I don't know. It was an experience. Mm-hmm. I'm glad we did it.
Totally.
What about you, Kyle?
I'm really glad that I got the chance to finally watch it. And I've been still thinking about it. I still got more YouTube videos in the queue to watch. So I'll be checking that out. I'm going to watch that chronological version of YouTube video that you mentioned. So I'll see how I feel. Well, I want to thank you all for listening to season 3, episode 2 of Snubs and Dubs. As always, you can find us everywhere on social media at Snubs and Dubs. That's on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Letterboxd, etc. We're also on Good Pod, so make sure to check us out there and join our official Discord. We'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on Memento or on this episode. So please send us a tweet or a message with a question, recommendation, or anything else. I'm also at Kyle Tobiasen on Twitter, and Jason is at Windy_Mills. Of course, all of those links will be in the show notes. Make sure to leave a 5-star review, share the show to everyone you know, and check back next week for another episode. Here's a sneak peek of the film we're going to talk about.
Vegas, huh?
Vegas?
Vegas.
Fantastic.
The heist is impossible.
Casino security cannot be beaten.
You're out of your minds.
Exactly.
You are up to something, Danny. What? You're pulling a job, aren't you? You're a thief and a liar.
I only lied about being a thief.
You're going to need a crew as nuts as you are. What do you got in mind?
That's right. Next time we're talking about Ocean's 11, so make sure to watch it before next episode. Can't wait for you guys to hear it. Thanks for listening. That's a wrap. Bye.
Bye for now.